Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're diving into a story that's packed with drama and has some pretty huge implications for how we think about faith even today.
Yeah, it's a really powerful story.
We're talking about the showdown on Mount Carmel, a pivotal moment in the Old Testament. We'll be using Dr. John Oswald's lecture on the Book of Kings to guide us as we unpack this story.
You know what's so interesting about this story? It's not just some ancient ritual.
Right.
It gets to the heart of what we believe even today, where we place our trust.
Okay, so let's set the scene for our listeners. Who are the key players in this story? And why is Mount Carmel such a significant location?
Well, you've got the prophet Elijah. He's like Yahweh's champion going up against King Ahab.
Okay.
Who has been leading Israel astray with his worship of Baal and Asherah.
Now, for those who need a refresher, who exactly are Baal and Asherah, and why were the Israelites so drawn to them?
Right. So Baal and Asherah were the big shot god and goddess of the Canaanites, the people that the Israelites were constantly battling with.
I see.
And people thought that they controlled things like rain and fertility, you know, pretty important stuff in that part of the world.
Definitely. So choosing to worship them was almost like picking a side in this ongoing conflict.
Exactly. And Mount Carmel overlooks the Mediterranean Sea, the source of rain and storms.
Right.
So Elijah's choice of location was no accident. It's like he's saying, let's see whose God really has power over the elements.
Wow. Okay. I can already feel the tension building here.
Yeah. And to make things even more dramatic, Elijah insisted that all 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah be present for this showdown.
Wow. So this wasn't just going to be some behind closed doors debate.
Not at all. This is a full blown public spectacle.
So what was Elijah's game plan here? Was he just going to try and outpreach these other prophets or what?
He took a much bolder approach. He challenges the Israelites. And this is where Dr. Oswald brings up that quote that always sticks with me.
Oh, yeah.
He says, "How long will you waver between two opinions?" Elijah is accusing them of trying to appease Yahweh while also hedging their bets with Baal and Asherah.
Yeah, trying to have it both ways. I think we've all been there at some point.
It's a very human tendency, and I think that's what makes the story so relatable even thousands of years later.
Absolutely.
Dr. Oswald compares ancient paganism with its attempts to manipulate the gods to our own modern attempts to control the world around us.
Really?
To get what we want. It's like we've replaced idols with Instagram likes.
Ooh, that's a good one. We're still trying to manipulate things just with different tools.
Yeah.
So how did this whole wavering between two opinions thing play out on Mount Carmel?
Well, Elijah throws down a challenge. He says, all right, let's put these gods to the test. We'll each prepare a bull as a sacrifice. You call on your god Baal and I'll call on Yahweh. The god who answers with fire, that's the true god.
Okay. Talk about high stakes.
Yeah.
So how did this divine duel go down?
Well, the prophets of Baal went first. They danced. They shouted. They even cut themselves trying to get Baal's attention.
Wow, really?
But there was nothing. No response, no fire, just silence. Dr. Oswald points out how the author of the story really emphasizes that silence.
Yeah.
Almost like a comedic beat to highlight the emptiness of their efforts.
I bet that was pretty awkward for them standing there with a dead bull and a whole lot of unanswered prayers.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So what did Elijah do? Did he just kind of stand back and let them crash and burn?
Not exactly. He takes his time. He rebuilds the altar of Yahweh, and then he does something really unexpected.
Okay, what's that?
He has the altar doused with water.
Really?
Not once, but three times.
Wait, he actually made it harder for God to answer with fire. What was he thinking?
It seems crazy, right? But Dr. Oswald suggests that by making it seemingly impossible, Elijah was eliminating any doubt. He was showing that this was not some magic trick.
Right.
This was the power of the one true God. And then he offers this simple, heartfelt prayer. No theatrics, no frenzy, just a humble appeal based on God's faithfulness in the past and his desire to turn the people's hearts back to him.
So it was about trust, not spectacle.
Yeah,
I'm on the edge of my seat here. What happens next?
Okay, so you know how some stories have a slow buildup and then bam, the climax hits you?
Yeah.
This is one of those moments. The Bible says, fire fell from heaven. It consumed the sacrifice, the altar, even the water. It was a decisive and undeniable display of power.
Wow, that must have been a truly awe-inspiring moment for those who were present.
Absolutely. And the people immediately recognized Yahweh. They started shouting, Yahweh, he is God. It was a moment of complete surrender, of recognizing a power far beyond their own.
Wow.
But, you know, as Dr. Oswald points out, this victory was also a stark reminder that choosing one God often means rejecting others.
Right.
And those choices can have serious consequences.
Okay. Things are about to take a darker turn, aren't they?
Yes. But before we get to the aftermath, I think it's important to understand just how significant this moment was. Remember that quote from Dr. Oswalt about knowing God means trusting him?
Well, this whole event was a powerful demonstration of what that trust looks like in action. Elijah trusted God even when it seemed illogical, even when it seemed impossible.
Right.
And because of that trust, God was able to work through him in an extraordinary way.
That's such a powerful insight. So this showdown wasn't just about fire from heaven. It was about the power of radical trust.
Exactly.
But where do we go from here? What happened after the flames died down?
Well, that's where things get a bit more complicated. But before we dive into the aftermath, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll explore the consequences of this victory and what it all means for us today.
Okay, we're back and ready to kind of unpack the aftermath of that epic showdown on Mount Carmel. Things got pretty intense there at the end of part one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had fire from heaven, a decisive victory for Yahweh, and now... Well, what happened next?
Well, immediately following this incredible display of power, the people kind of swept up in the moment, acknowledged Yahweh as the one true God. But as Dr. Oswalt highlights, you know, this wasn't just some feel-good moment of spiritual awakening. Well, there were real-world consequences to this choice.
Okay, so what were those consequences? Did everyone just suddenly start, you know, living happily ever after, worshiping Yahweh and, you know, getting along?
Not quite. The victory was followed by a pretty harsh act, the execution of the prophets of Baal at Elijah's command. You know, it's a reminder that choosing one God often meant rejecting others, and that those choices could have serious, even violent consequences.
That does seem a bit jarring after, you know, such a powerful display of divine power. It kind of makes you wonder if some people might see that as a cruel act. Like, how does that fit in with the idea of a loving God?
Yeah, it's a tough question, and one that Dr. Oswalt doesn't shy away from. He acknowledges that this event, and others like it in the Old Testament, can be difficult to reconcile with our modern understanding of God's love and mercy. But he also reminds us that we're looking at these events through a very different cultural lens.
Right, so context is key here. We can't just impose our 21st century values onto a story that took place thousands of years ago.
Exactly, and it's important to remember that even within the Bible, there are different perspectives on these events. There's a constant tension between justice and mercy, between God's wrath and his love. The story in many ways embodies that tension.
Okay, so we've got this, you know, complex picture emerging, a God who is both powerful and just, but also merciful and loving. How do we reconcile those seemingly contradictory aspects?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I think it's one that each of us has to grapple with in our own way. But, you know, for me, what's so compelling about this story and about the Bible as a whole is that it doesn't shy away from these tough questions.
Right.
It presents us with a God who is both awe-inspiring and relatable, a God who is big enough to encompass all of the complexities of human experience.
That's a really helpful way to frame it. It's not about finding easy answers. It's about embracing the mystery and wrestling with these, you know, big questions.
Exactly. And I think that wrestling is part of what deepens our faith and helps us to grow. But let's get back to the story. After the execution of the prophets of Baal, there's this really interesting anecdote that Dr. Oswalt shares about a Sunday school picture that used to hang in his classroom. It's an image of Elijah running ahead of King Ahab's chariot as the rain pours down.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing those kinds of pictures when I was a kid. Elijah looking all heroic with the wind whipping through his hair.
Right.
But what's the significance of that image?
Well, Dr. Oswalt points out that it captures this idea that God can use ordinary people for extraordinary purposes.
Okay.
Elijah wasn't some superhero with magical powers. He was a regular guy who chose to trust God completely, even when it seemed crazy, even when it meant confronting a king and hundreds of false prophets.
It's like that saying, God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called.
Yeah.
So even in the aftermath of this dramatic showdown, we see this theme of trust emerging again.
Mm-hmm.
But how does this ancient story about trusting God translate into our lives today? What does surrender look like in practical terms?
Yeah. That's the question, isn't it? And I think it's one that we'll be exploring throughout the rest of this deep dive. But one thing that Dr. Oswalt emphasizes is that surrendering to God doesn't mean we become passive bystanders.
Right.
It's actually the opposite. It's about aligning our will with God's will so that we can be active participants in his plan for the world.
Okay, so it's not about, you know, sitting back and waiting for God to do everything. It's about actively participating in his work.
Yeah.
But how do we know what God's will is? How do we discern his voice in the midst of all the noise and chaos of our lives.
Yeah, that's why things get a bit more nuanced and where we'll have to move beyond the specifics of this story and into the broader themes of faith and discernment. But before we get there, let's take a closer look at what Dr. Oswalt has to say about the nature of surrender itself.
Okay.
Because it's often misunderstood, isn't it?
Yeah. I think a lot of people see surrender as weakness, as giving up.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like Dr. Oswalt has a different perspective.
He does. He suggests that surrendering to God isn't about giving up. It's about aligning ourselves with a power greater than ourselves, a power that can work through us in ways we could never imagine.
So it's less about raising the white flag and more about tapping into a source of strength and guidance.
Exactly. And it's not a one-time event. It's a daily practice of choosing to trust God even when things are tough. But we'll dive deeper into what that practice looks like in part three.
We're back, and you know, we've been talking about this incredible showdown on Mount Carmel.
Yeah.
And this idea of radical trust. But now I think we need to tackle the big question.
Yeah.
You know, what does it actually look like to surrender to God in our everyday lives?
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to watch Elijah call down fire from heaven, but it's another thing entirely to apply that kind of trust to our own, you know, messy, complicated lives.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it's one that a lot of people struggle with, you know. But Dr. Oswalt offers some really helpful insights here. He emphasizes that surrendering to God doesn't mean we become passive bystanders. We don't just, you know, sit on a mountaintop waiting for instructions.
Right.
It's actually quite the opposite.
Okay, so it's not about giving up control altogether. It's about aligning our will with God's will. But how do we do that?
I mean, yeah.
God doesn't exactly send us voice memos with detailed to-do lists.
That's true, although sometimes I wish he did. I think the key lies in what Dr. Oswalt calls active surrender. You know, it's about being open to God's leading in every aspect of our lives,
mm-hmm.
in our relationships, our work, our decision making, and being willing to step outside of our comfort zones when he nudges us in a new direction.
Okay, so it's about being attentive to those nudges, those moments where we sense God's guidance, even if it's not always, you know, clear or comfortable.
Exactly. And it might look different for each of us. For someone who thrives on action surrender, it might mean taking a step back and asking, God, where do you want me to focus my energy? What impact are you calling me to make? For someone who struggles with fear or anxiety surrender, might mean letting go of the need to control every outcome and trusting that God has a plan, even when we can't see it.
So it's about aligning our unique gifts and personalities with God's purpose for our lives. It's not about trying to fit into some cookie-cutter mold of what a surrendered life should look like.
Yeah, I love that. It's about embracing who God created us to be and allowing him to work through our strengths and even our weaknesses. And you know what's so exciting about this whole concept of active surrender is that it's not just about us becoming better people. It's about becoming agents of change in the world.
That's right. Dr. Oswalt keeps coming back to this idea that surrendering to God makes us available for good for us and for the world. But what does that actually look like in practice? Got any real-world examples?
Absolutely. Think about a doctor who surrenders their skills to God's service. You know, not just treating patients, but seeing each interaction as an opportunity to offer compassion and healing. Or an artist who uses their creativity to inspire hope and beauty in a world that often feels dark and chaotic. Or even just a parent who chooses to respond to their child's tantrum with patience and understanding, modeling God's love in the midst of a stressful moment. These might seem like small everyday acts, but they have the potential to ripple outward, creating a more loving, just, and compassionate world.
That's such a powerful image, those ripples of goodness spreading outward, transforming lives and communities. And it all starts with that simple act of surrender, that willingness to say, God, here I am, use me. It's like we're tapping into a source of power and purpose that's far greater than ourselves.
Exactly. And you know what really struck me about Dr. Oswalt's lecture is the sense of joy that permeates his talk about surrender. It's not about, you know, gritting our teeth and doing what we think God wants us to do. It's about finding a deep, abiding joy in aligning our lives with his purpose.
Yeah, it's like when we surrender to God's plan, we're finally free to be who we were created to be. We're not striving. We're not forcing things. We're simply allowing ourselves to be swept up in this current of grace and purpose.
Beautifully said. And you know, as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with this sense of hope and possibility. If a regular guy like Elijah could be used by God to do extraordinary things, then maybe, just maybe, we can too.
I love that. So what's our final takeaway for our listeners today? What's the one thing we want them to remember from this epic showdown on Mount Carmel?
I think it's this. Surrender isn't about weakness. It's about strength. It's about tapping into a source of power and purpose that can transform our lives and the world around us. It's about saying yes to God's invitation to partner with him in creating something beautiful and meaningful.
So well said. And on that inspiring note, we'll leave you to ponder your own journey of surrender. What gifts and talents are you holding back? What difference are you called to make in the world? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time for another adventure in knowledge and inspiration.